I'll buy them, dude. Are you kidding?
All right, we're recording now.
I'm buying
them. I'll send to you.
I'll shoot you my address, but you better not give me a lot.
Okay.
Capitalism.
I'll send her one of these. She's been on the show.
I've got some more magnets anyways for a video for Amazon, so I'll send you some.
Well, I will inspire everybody at my church to hit you up and get some, because they'll probably want something like that.
The people at your church will love his website.
Yeah. I wanna design, and you can steal it. I mean, it's totally something I think that's an equal opportunity kind of thing. But you know all those signs that say "Be kind"?
Yep.
They've really been pissing off my mom. And she's like, we need signs that say "be pissed."
So that's funny to say that, Amy. I've actually got a vinyl decal that says "be kind" with the middle finger sticking up.
That's a good one.
She's like, people need to get mad. Like, screw this "be kind" shit. She's like, I don't know why more people. That
would probably go good, Jason, to market She's that towards the Trump area. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there was some lady that I was driving behind, and she was driving slow as fuck. I'm like, come on, driving Miss Daisy. Just get off go onto a side street or something, get the fuck off the road. And it's like, she had this "be kind." I'm like, I just wanted to flip her off, and it's like, why don't I just take that little decal on her grocery getter and
I've always wanted a little marquee on the back of my car so that I can whatever I want to and just tell the guy, you know, I back me like
I have one, dude. The scroll, that it's a red scroll, I can type in whatever I want and it'll go across.
Oh god, dude. I had a guy this morning. I'm on my way to work. I go to work, it's dark. And I get this big truck, this big Ram or something behind me. He's got those great big, huge halogen, I mean, really light, really bright LEDs. And I mean, they're right at like my mirror level in my RAV4. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, my whole freaking cab of my car is lit up. I'm like, God dang it. I hate that.
So out here, there's a lot of people that have redneck mobiles. So it's like jacked up trucks with like the lights in the wheel wells, as well as the super bright LED headlights, plus the lights on top of the fucking cab and everything.
My people,
they look cool. But whenever I'm driving in my Kia Forte and those lights are fucking lasers in my in all my mirrors, and I have to like hug my steering wheel to get out of the way of all the lights because I already have light sensitivity at night anyway with headlights. And I'm just like, dude, fuck out of here. One of those James Bond like exhaust bullet, you know, the guns that shoot out the back, you know. Just
I could show you how to make it.
I flip the rear view mirror shade and I take my foot off the gas.
I don't smoke anymore, but I used to have like cigarillos or some kind of cigar in my car just for that situation. Like I would just literally flip the mirror and I'll go. It's not that I'll go slow. I'm just not going to go any faster. And then I'll light something up and like hang my hand out the window.
No, I actually, I'm breaking law anyway, because I'm a single guy. I only have one person in the car. I'm in the commuter lane, so
I take it just the opposite direction. I see how much I can draw them, how fast I can get them to go. Because if they're doing that and they're on your ass and they get their bright lights, if you start speeding up a little bit, they're going to keep speeding up and speeding up. You'll just see how fast you can get them to go. Because when the police come, they're getting a ticket. You just drive away.
I do something similar to people wherever I'm sitting at the light and like it's a turn arrow, and as soon as it turns green, they already honking at me before I could even have a chance to take my foot off the brake. And it's not that I'm not paying it. Like if I'm on my phone, I don't get upset with them. It's like, yeah, I'm a dumbass. Thank you for reminding me. But if I'm sitting there just paying attention, looking at the light, and as soon as it turns green, they honk. I just go like a mile an hour through the intersection and just go, and they're like blaring on their horns, waving at me and everything, swerving and revving their engine and stuff. And then like, as soon as I get through the intersection and stuff like that, if I get to the section where they can actually pass me, I just floor it. And it's like, take off in front of them to where they can't catch up with me. It's hilarious.
You know what my dad used to recommend was, he's like, always swerve. He's like, you don't slam on your brakes, because if they rear end you, that could be problematic. I mean, yeah, they're following
just do one of those.
But if you do a swerve, then sometimes it checks people to make them realize that they're not, they don't have enough stopping time to avoid whatever you might be legitimately swerving for. So if there is
that's a good idea.
They'll back off. Yeah.
I've had those accidents before, so I don't really screw around too much other than just take my foot off the gas. It's not fun. I've been hitting the rear before.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot of chiropractic work after that.
That's why I keep an Italian in the trunk of the Lincoln. I just pop the trunk open, and Luigi sticks his 45 up there, and everyone backs the fuck up.
Yeah, I was wondering how, like, survival mode we get, because I was ready to be like, guys, I'm a lady. I just keep Rico. That's the survival gear that I
He's a survival gear for a town. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have seen his weightlifting stuff. He's lifting, you know, cars. He's got a dumbbell with two of your cars, two of your, you know, your Kias on the side. He's just
listening. Amy, I'm going out to Wisconsin to see Ken. So what am I in for?
Oh, you're gonna have a great time. He's got a great setup, man. It's gonna be good. But when are you going? Because I went in January.
Yeah, you did.
I'm going in June. I'm going to the car show.
During swamp ass season. Come down here in June, dude. You don't have swamp ass. You'll be out here sweating through your wife beater.
I gotta figure out whether I'm gonna be able to get my guitar out there in one piece. So that's my thing. So
you can usually carry those on the plane. There's you can carry that on the plane, and on the front of the plane, not many people know this, but there's a small stand-up for like a long coat or something.
Well, is that right?
Yep, you can usually put it right in there.
I wonder if they do that as a carry-on.
My dad used to bring his trombone right there used to go on the airplane all the time in a hard case. Put it in. There's a little bin for it.
I tell you, the way I'm just gonna pray that you both get there in all one piece, because they're freaking me out.
I hate flying too. I do too.
I'm driving up there, so I'm not
air traffic control and all of like the near misses that they're having and collisions. I'm driving.
Are there new hires? Have you heard about who they're going to be new hiring hires. Soon?
Yeah,
the DEI initiatives.
No, the mentally retarded ones. Not the DEI ones, but like the mentally retarded ones. Like, what? You're gonna hire what kind of co-pilots? I don't care what race they are, but you're actually gonna get somebody with a 30 IQ. Is that really gonna go over well?
Well, I mean, but that's the thing, is the DEI is about they bring down standards, you know, in order to be more inclusive. And it's not race, it's all thing. It's like
freaking crazy. It's so stupid.
They'll get it low enough that they'll hire me.
Dude.
Then you're
in trouble.
I mean, God is good, and I'm praying that I get to stay in this game a while. But like, when I start hearing shit like that, I'm like, I like to fly, because I was always like, you know, I don't know how to do any of this shit anyway. I like the flying part.
I just hate the flying.
I'm good with the flying. I'm good with being up there. It's the takeoff and it's the landing. Those are the two things I hate.
Those don't even bother me. It's everything else. It's the cattle freaking seats and you're in there and it's shitty, and it's the people at the airport that treat you like shit, and it's just all the other bullshit. This taking off my goddamn shoes thing.
Yeah, you know, asshole microscoped. Yeah.
Well, that's not so bad. What? Let's be honest. That's not so bad.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Is it cold? So you guys are just talking about regular commuting. Fine. I've had people ask me if I was in a band because of the gear that I've had to actually ship. And when you have to stay underweight as a tattoo artist traveling, and I'm traveling with inks that will explode in habits. So you have to wrap all of your ink to make sure that it can actually travel with you.
Yeah, that would be a pain in the ass. Yeah, dude,
it's dumb. I hate traveling on plane via, and there's nothing. They talk about these like pressurized, you know, like really awesome traveling containers. No,
No, they don't matter when they put them in the belly, where it's not pressurized. Yeah, it's you don't have it up top with you.
If you're a tattoo artist traveling, it's to be a black and gray artist. That way you only have to bring one thing of ink.
That's the only way. That's not a bad plan.
That's the way to do it. A lot of them, they're just like, yeah, I don't want to travel with all that. Either that or they're willing to buy like a little set of ink when they get there. But like the gear alone, I mean, it is unbelievable. Traveling with that gear. And you know, there's a whole rental services at certain conventions that are actually they'll bring you beds and seats and chairs and all the stuff that you can rent for the convention, because you know all they provide for you is like fold out chairs. So you're either doomed to work out of a fold out chair and have your client lay across several fold out chairs, or you travel with all this gear that's it's unbelievable. So the flights go far beyond just my own personal safety. It's unbelievable.
It's just a hassle.
Yeah.
It's a hassle.
Yeah.
It'd almost be better to like overnight or like UPS 2 day ship your shit in front of you or something.
There are people who do that.
As a drummer, that's what I always had to do, because you can't bring a drum set on the airplane. So I'd ship it UPS. UPS ground or air, depending on what it was. And it used to be really reasonable. Now that's, you know, that's a $300 date each way.
Dang. I know. It's
so this is why I just drive everywhere. Like, unless I'm at the pilot's helm, I'm not flying anymore. I'm done.
I got about a 1500 mile circle. I'll drive anywhere within 1500 miles.
You drive all the way from Minnesota down to Arizona. Yeah. You can pretty much drive anywhere.
I will drive anywhere, but you know, just to time it. You know, it's just, it's like, all right, anything inside of 600-700 miles, you're saving a little bit of time in the airplane, but really by the time you wake up, you go through security, you do this, it's like, that's going to get delayed. And then you get to the airport, you get to your car, so you drove for 8 hours, you know, you would have been there an hour earlier and frazzled from the flight, or you get there relaxed after driving for 8 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're a little stiff from sitting, but other than that, you're good.
Not in my car.
I have met really cool people on planes before. I met a guy that I'm still Facebook friends with, a civil engineer. We had a great conversation. I met a woman that, I wish that I liked painting houses, like painting portraits of houses and doing landscapes like that.
I love doing those.
I'm so good at it. I'll refer you to her. She told me she'd
do that.
She's an exceedingly wealthy woman connected to a wealthy family that I did this really, really, I did not charge enough, but I honestly don't think I could charge enough to enjoy doing.
Yeah, it. No, I know what you mean. I just did one I showed these guys the other night, this guy that let us in his car collection, and he doesn't let many people in his car collection. It's this huge collection. So they got his daughter to take a picture of him. He's like 87 years old, holding his two poodle puppies. Now I can do the animals pretty good. I got pretty good at animals, but I had to do him too. And it looks like him. It came out okay, but in my mind, you know, it's just crayons on a chalkboard or something. You know what I mean? I'm just like, it's not. You know, I have to take a picture of it and look it on my phone, because then I'm like, it separates me from the painting, and I'm like, oh, that does look pretty good. That's him. You know, and I placed him in his museum with his gas pumps and crazy old 30s Packard behind him. And, you know, all that stuff looks great. And they're all of his cars are parked on like real Oriental rugs and Persian rugs. And they're all real ones from, you know, I had that all in there. So all the details there, I know when they see at the club, and we're going to present it to this guy as a thank you for showing us through his thing, you know, they're all going to love it, you know, but I'm still going to look and be like, and it's one of those, I talked to Stacy about it. I'm like, I don't think I should charge him for this. And she's looking at me like, are you high? Yeah. She's like, you got to charge him. I'm like,
I know exactly how you feel.
I thought I would be through it before I was, and I was hitting it by the end. I'm sorry to cut you off, Jason.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say that, like, this one I drew.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's awesome.
It's like,
you drew that one. Cool.
Yes. I hand drew this one, and I scanned it in with my scanner and whatnot, and then colored it with Photoshop and Illustrator. But it's like, some people are like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, it sucks.
No, my dad would love that shit. He always fucking sends me memes like that.
But yeah, I mean, like, listen to you guys talk about art school and whatnot. I mean, I went to MCAD also, like Ken did. Mm-hmm. I gave up after a year because it burnt me out.
That's what the first year did.
Yeah. I mean, I was in high school. I was in advanced placement for art and whatnot. You know, listen to you talk about earlier about doing stuff with your hands. I loved working with clay.
Yes.
I used to one of the guys I went to high school with wanted me to sell some of my stuff. I was
very cool.
I was actually really good at doing sculptures of like Dungeons and Dragons creatures and whatnot. I was really, really freaking good at it. Nice, Chris.
Yeah, my kid made this for me a few years back. I think it was like sixth grade, or whatever.
Keep it forever, man. Keep that for
yes.
No, dude, I keep all kinds of crap. Like, I got a whole wall right here with all of like the birthday and Christmas and shit, like the cards that they would draw me or whatever. It's like all right up here on the wall.
I have it all saved too, yes. But yeah, working with pottery and what, I loved it and I should have kept it up and I didn't.
You can still do it, Jason.
I mean, I know I probably could.
And it's fun. But now you talk to me because I'll give you this clay. This is automotive clay. This is the shit right here. This is what like GM and stuff uses. I've done whole motorcycles in this shit. And you can carve it like it's wood. And when it's done, you can paint it. I mean, it's really, really cool. It's not that expensive. It's like $10 That's for a 2-pound. Huh?
Send me a link too, because I've been getting really into wood sculpting and doing a lot of Dremel tool work and stuff like that.
Oh, cool! Yeah, I love doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And metal work and all that. I just this never. How can anyone be fucking bored? Ever.
No. Well, that's the thing. It's like, when you love playing with stuff, you just, you know, you don't really care that you suck.
And it's like I said, you can drop things like this thing I just showed you here. These are 3 or 4 of pieces of my tiki chess set that I started making like 9 years ago. And I just keep mine to my desk to remember. I got to get to that one day.
I got to get to that chess set that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So yeah. I got a question. I don't think I've ever asked this or heard you answer it. What is the obsession with tiki shit?
Fuck. It's so cool.
That's it. I didn't know if it was like, oh yeah, growing up, me and my dad would always talk about going to Hawaii and never did or something.
No,
nope. I don't know.
It came down to there was a show called The Brady Bunch before you were born.
I saw reruns, damn it. All right. Yeah.
So there was one time, there was one Brady Bunch episode, and Vincent Price was the guest star. The Bradys went to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And like there was a kid named Jimmy Bakaya. It was this name in the show. I don't know. I remember this shit. This is why I can't like balance a checkbook, because this kind of stuff is taking up that space in my brain. So the guy was Jimmy Bakaya, and like they found him in a cave, and it was just this kid. And so the Brady kids saw this kid, and Vincent Price was this evil guy, and there was like tiki monsters and stuff. And they brought him like baked beans and Franks and a flashlight so they could feed him in a cave. It's the most fucked up thing ever. It's like just back when everyone was high, like, you know what we should do, man? We should have him go to like Hawaii. And then, yeah, but like Vincent Price is there. Well, what about Foster Brooks? No, Vince, let's just go Vincent Price because he's scarier, you know? And it was this crazy thing. Anyway, it kind of, I started to think that stuff was kind of cool. And then I liked tiki drinks because I thought they were hilarious with umbrellas and flowers and fuck all in them, and they tasted good. Yeah. And you buy a tiki drink for a girl and she thinks you're rich. And it was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then I just learned more about the culture, and like the mid-century modern aesthetic is so full of the tiki Polynesian kind of world. There was also a restaurant called the Honolulu. It was a Chinese restaurant growing up, and it was built in the mid-70s. So think about the old, you know, where you sit, you're facing a table for two, and had the things that come over the top of the, you know, the two chairs were like this, you know, the table is down here and the two chairs would come over and had all the dragons and fuck all in it. But it was all tiki stuff and bamboo. And, you know, it was a place we all hung out, and it was just the coolest vibe. And I've been just trying to recreate that. That's why I got that whole tiki bar thing. And I go to this tiki oasis in Arizona every year. This year, I'm going to spend like $4,000 going to this fucking tiki oasis to sit there and drink and listen to surf music. And, you know, with a bunch of like lunatics.
In Arizona, you're going to be listening to the surf music. That's the funny part about it. Landlocked state surf music. Yeah.
This is a tiki bar here. That's even crazy.
Yeah, awesome sushi in Arizona.
There used to be one in Minnesota, too.
Your signature is Hawaiian shirts, too. Like
that. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well, and this, I wore this one for you, Amy, because I know you can appreciate a good pinup girl. Yeah. So this is, of course, Betty Page. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, there you
go. That's a really cool shirt. That is a very cool shirt.
All the buttons, I can't show them, but all the buttons have a little picture of Betty Page's face on them too.
What?
Yeah, this is a sick. This is the shirt that I wear when I want to piss people off. Like if I know there's gonna be a bunch of, is this gonna be a bunch of feminists around? I wear this. Because then when I say, they're like, "Oh, that's so sexist." I'm like, "This is Betty Page. She did this for a while, and then she found God and dropped out at the peak of her career.
She was revolutionary.
Yeah, she really was.
Really, really was. When I go to church, I get a lot of flack for wearing these jeans that have holes in them. And one guy was like, how much you spend for those jeans that have the holes in them? I said, well, I didn't pay anything extra from the ones that I bought of the same brand. So they came on the house, man. Like I got them for free, you know, like these whole features. And like, it's come up a couple times. And then I said to somebody, I said, yeah, I wear them on Sunday. They're my holy jeans.
when I was doing my political thing with the Republican group, one of the things I would do is I would go give speeches at churches. So mm-hmm. I would talk to church groups in the church basement. It was never at the, you know, Sunday. It was usually like a Wednesday night. They meet and they talk politics or whatever. And I would always go in there with the whole idea is I want to earn their trust, and then I'm going to shock the fuck out of them and then earn their trust back to shake them up a little bit, because these Christians need to wake the fuck up. And yeah. You know, so I would sit there. And we would talk about, you know, whoever the person was, and this person is a God-fearing man. He'd be a good person. And he believes in the Bible and all this kind of stuff. You know, I'd get, yes, rah, rah, you know, all the red meat. You throw it out there. And this is what the pastors do. This is nothing new. And then I'd go, let me tell you a story about where I came from. And I say, you know, I didn't grow up. I grew up in Massachusetts. Parents are school teachers. I went to art school in Minneapolis. I'm about as far right or far left liberal as you could even imagine being. And I said, I told him this, I said, to the point where when I wasn't married and the girl that I was having sex with at the time came and told me that she was pregnant. I'm like, why don't you just take care of that?
Right. Yeah.
And I said, and they, you could see this room full of 60 to 70 year old women and men just, well, this charlatan, you know? And I'd give them a minute to talk amongst themselves, because they would just, you know, they do that. And then I'd say, as soon as those words rolled off of my tongue, something from above, and I wasn't a believer yet, but something struck me. And I realized that what I said was the worst moment. This is the worst moment of my life. I have absolutely hit bottom. And from there, then I could build. Mm-hmm. And it was great, because they're like, what? And then I would bring that in, because I'd say things like, look at some of these people. You don't think are a good Christian or not a good Christian. You don't know what a good Christian is, because you don't know what's in people's heart.
Right.
People have moments. And it was like every time I did that and told that story, we'd turn it around and we'd win that precinct every time. And it was, there was no lies to it. It was just all truth, and it was heart. And it was usually, I can say it now, but usually I couldn't get through it without really, you know, choking up. Yeah. And it was authentic, because I'm pouring my heart above my absolute worst moment of my life to these people. And then you just say, if I can be here and talking to you guys, and you 100 people are here to listen to me.
Yeah.
You didn't expect this, did you? Yeah. Well, this is what God expects from you.
Dude, that's the shakeup that's in my space too. I think I'm really there to kind of balance it out a little bit in that way. You know, I'm tattooed up to here, like, you know, like
literally. Yeah.
I kind of stand out a lot, But yeah, it's the same kind of thing. But it's genuine, and I think it kind of opens up the perspective, because when you're, it gets very incellular, you know, when you're really digesting just the same crowd over and over again. That, you know, I think.
But you got to build the trust first. You have to have that. You have to build that trust with people first, where they just like. And for you, with someone that would come up to you and talk to you about your genes, you've built that trust, whether you know it or not, for them to approach you and be like, well, what's this about? You know,
I also find tell them, like, you think you're the worst thing that's been thrown my way, buddy.
Here's one for yes. you for your holy genes. So we go to a place called The Barn. I've told Ken, I think I've told Harkos, and I don't know Jason knows, but we go to a place called The Barn. It's a venue, a music venue, really nice. Old dairy barn turned into a sound stage. It's really, really cool. I'll never go to another place to go listen to live music. But anyway, most of the people are our age, my age, not our age.
You can't say our age. You're the only one.
Yeah, you're the only one. Even me, who's old, and I'm old. I'm still not your age.
So my wife, Ken's parents are in your age. So
my wife is 56. She's 6 years younger than me. And she's 6 years younger than me. Anyway, so she loves wearing holy jeans, and most of the women just cannot stand it.
Don't get it, man.
I said, you did it, baby. You're looking good. I said, don't worry about it. But it's funny. Oh. It's just hilarious.
It's a whole fugazi though, because it's I like. So for a long time before I had my new car, I had a car. It was a Hyundai Sonata that I had for forever ago, and it had no car door handles except for the driver's side. And I had actually had to replace that one, and it didn't match the rest of the car. So the color was like completely off.
Good times.
This constantly was the thing that people would point out, be like, is that your car out there? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, what's with the door handles? And I was like, who's going to steal that car? Like, seriously, who the hell is going to look at that car twice? I'm like, I just believe that you don't give people reasons to want to take from you. And I was like, I've lived in the city. I've had cars stolen. They weren't flashy cars. In fact, they were just easy to steal.
Yeah, they'll take anything.
FYI, Hyundai or Plymouth Voyager or Dodge Caravan. That was a hot ticket, man. Minivan, but they used to dump the seats out and then steal other stuff. And
with
then,
the minivan.
Yeah.
But it was fun fact about your door handles. You could have actually gone to your insurance company and got the anti-theft device by not having door handles. I did that because I shaved the door handles off one of the cars I had. What? And I just I had a wire that you'd pull and it would open the door. But I shaved the door handles. And I said, I put an anti-theft device, and they gave me the anti-theft device discount on my insurance because I shaved the door handles. I'm like, how do you get in?
But did you tell them what I did for the anti-theft device was shave off the door handles, or you just said I put on?
I told them exactly that. I told them, I said, this is what I've done to make sure no one steals this car.
And then Tesla stole, you should have patented, Tesla stole your design.
We're in talks.
Are you the one that's giving Elon that mushrooms and microdosing him?
I'm working on it.
There you go.
That's good. The man needs it. I need it. But yeah, that was what I used to do. And I have that philosophy with everything in my life. Like, it's part of the reason why I like being tattooed as a person, or being, you know, just anything that you are going to presume about me. I love people that when they open their mouth, I'm like surprised, because, you know, as you get older in this world, it's hard. It's hard to be surprised. So when somebody alters my perception and gives me something like different to look at in a way I never saw it before, I'm like, whoa, that's cool. And I love it. So for me, that's what wearing all different kinds of things is about. It's just like, why not play? You have all this stuff to paint with, you know, like, just do it. Right. You know, it's not the definitive part of my character. It's not what defines me. It's just what I'm chose to wear today. Have fun with it, man. Right. Like, and God don't care. Like you said, Ken, the nature of my heart is something that only God can see. And you got to ask otherwise, because no amount of signature purses or cars with handles is gonna really show that.
Right. Well, and you bring up something good of talking with people that you never know what's gonna come out of their mouths. It's why that I love being knowing this group of people right here. It's, you know, some Bruce gets going on some of the survival stuff, and I'm like, wow, I never thought of that. Oh, that's a really good idea. Jesus Christ, I know nothing about this. I'm gonna die if this all goes to hell. Shit, I gotta talk to Bruce more. And Chris, with, you know, years ago when we started to interact on the Nomad Network, you know, I started watching your videos because you started talking about, like, you know, I'm not a hip hop guy, so what did I know? It's not my thing. But you're like, no, we're talking about liberty and doing this. And so I started watching your videos about what you're talking about. I'm like, holy fuck, this is awesome. I mean, like, truly, wow. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how he does it. And here's why it opened my eyes, because now I know somebody that does it. Famoso, it's different, man. When you're just like, you know, I don't like this and I don't like that, you know. And but like, okay, now I know this guy. I talked to him in the network, so he's obviously serious about doing what he's doing. I should check it out because they said it. Check it out. And I was watching. I was like, wow, this is actually a great message. This is really cool shit. And the videos you're putting together and stuff, like you said, you're like, oh, you know what? They're low budget. I didn't have anything, but I'm watching them. I'm like, they were so compelling. And then watching Bruce react to your videos too was another thing, because he'd be talking about it. I'm like, well, I haven't seen that one. I got to check that one out.
Well, we had him on. I had him on the podcast.
Yeah,
a couple years ago, when he was at his Hip Hop Hour, and I got all turned on with Famoso. Right? Is that his name? Famoso.
Yeah. You got obsessed with Famoso's music.
Yeah, dude. He's got some cool freaking riffs, man. I love it.
Yeah.
I was like, what do you mean, dude? I'm 63 years old.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, that whole situation with both of y'all, like, whenever I was doing that, like, now that I'm doing, like, the marketing thing, it's a little bit, well, plus I know y'all, so it's a little bit different, right? Like,
right.
Like, you know, but back then, like, I felt like I was an outcast in Nomad Network, right? Because everybody else, they're like, oh, you know, like, they're trying to build this business with this thing or that thing or whatever, and I'm over here trying to do something out of left field, but use all the same things,
yeah,
you know, the same tactics, right? But then, yeah, then I got, you know, you two, and I'm just like, Ken, you know, whenever I joined, you were, like, always, like, the first one talking on the weekly calls and everything like that, and, like, you know, you had, like, a closer relationship with Jason and stuff. I'm like, okay, this guy's basically, like, number two in this network, you know? And then, but yeah, like, whenever you guys... You're right, but I'm just... Yeah, there's that... Well, okay, whatever. But, no, like, when you guys were like, oh, I like your stuff, I'm like... I wouldn't have imagined that, but okay.
Yeah, two old white guys. What
was that, Bruce?
Ken was the Lou Cabrazzi.
Yeah. Lou Cabrazzi. Well, here's the deal I do in Zoom calls whenever I'm in groups like this, because whenever a speaker is talking and they, like, open up for questions, everyone fucking does this. And I've noticed that. So I'm like, if I'm always the first one and I'm consistently the first one, I'm the one that the host will know. They'll rely on to start things off.
You know, yeah, I've always heard about this because I'm the same way, Ken. And actually, I've been approached by people being like, hey, you should professionally be paid to be, like, a ringer for people who are trying to.
I've had that offer too.
Yeah, because they're like, you ask the first question. Like, if they have a Q&A, I'm always the first to, like, raise my hand and ask a question. And they're like, you pop off, you start it. And, like, the way that you kind of keep engaging the conversation, it allowed me to present better. And I was like, maybe there is a job like that.
There is a job for that. And, you know, and actually it got to a point with the Nomad Network where I would private message Jason. I'm like, Jason, I don't want to be that guy that's always the pain in the ass. I said, so you can tell me, hey, you know, let someone else go. He's like, no. You always get things going, man. If you don't start, they'll just sit there. This thing's going to be over in 10 minutes and no one will say shit. You know? And it's true, because there's times where I just experimented. It's just like, so how's things going, everybody? That's, you know, and I just sit there.
Yeah.
And it would be dead silence unless Amy was there. You know, and person. It was like, oh, that I've always been one to jump in, because I'm like, again, in the Nomad Network, it blew my mind that there's 2,000 people in here paying good money. I mean, for a while there, it was pretty fucking expensive to be in there. And they won't take advantage of the person that brought you in. And that's what I looked at, is it's like, this is taking advantage of, this is stealing from Jason Stapleton, is his because he's happy to give. It's not a shtick with him. Mm-hmm. You know, he's happy to give, and he's the real guy. And I'm like, so everyone's just going to not worry about that, huh? Okay. Well, this is great, because the five of us can sit and talk to him. Well, now any one of the five of us could walk up to him in the street. He'd know who we were. We'd go have a drink or coffee or something to eat, and it'd be great. I mean, we go out to dinner with him every year when I go down to Scottsdale.
Yeah, I want to hang out with him. I didn't make it the last time.
His wife's awesome. His wife, Nancy, is a fucking riot.
I'm sure all of them are awesome.
And her and Stacy, it was fun watching those two, because you know Stacy, she has no fucking filter.
I love it.
I love that.
Oh, she's great. And Nancy's in a world in Hollywood and dealing with those people. She was like, oh my God. Jason's like, Nancy loves Stacy. She's like her favorite person.
She's got this, like, she doesn't even have anything on her face. Like her face completely like her facial expression is like, what? Like if she feels something, it's there before it even comes out of her mouth. So yeah. It's completely transparent. It's very refreshing and awesome.
Oh, she's awesome. It used to embarrass me, because I was always very guarded with what I said, and I was very, because that's the way I was raised. You know, you'd be polite always. And she showed me that you know, there's times where you got to give no fucks and just say the shit that someone needs to hear. And as we got older and stuff, I realized how much she had helped me. Just in because I was really easy to be walked all over, really easy. You could just take from me and steal from me like nothing, and I would do it with a smile on my face and then go feel bad about myself for the next month and a half. And she's like, why don't you just not fucking do that part and tell the person to go fuck themselves?
She reminds me of
you can do that.
My friend Amy D. I actually had a podcast before any of that called Why I'm Single. That my friend Amy D used to do with me, and I called her my clutch friend, because she's like the clutch purse that, like, or the person you go to that, like, slaps you against the head, like you're saying, Stacy. It's like, why are you doing that? Get out now. But it was like, we did it as a dating podcast, because she was with her person, and she at first coined this thing where what she would do is, it was during the like internet dating phase, right? Like, so she created Why I'm Single because she actually is a fraud investigator. And so knew how to like clap back really well with guys that thought they could like abuse her. So she would do like all these freaking like screenshots of guys, and then just started this Instagram page where she would post like in these private groups these men that were awful to her and that would take her for a ride, and it became this community of like, you know, scorned women who like would share all of their dating debacles. And so she became really good at like seeing the bullshit before it happened. So when I started dating again and I was going into that realm, I said, Amy, we should have a podcast, you know, bring back Why I'm Single, but I'm the test dummy. You can use me as like the lamb to the slaughter, because I'm a freaking idiot, man. And like, I'd like send her text messages and things, and she's like, block them now. She's like, they're about to do this. And then sure enough, it would be like this stream of insults that would come over. Like, it would go from like, yeah, I'm not really interested, and they'd be like, then they would be like, you fucking bitch, like blah, blah, blah. And it would just like, she's like, get him out of there, block him. But like, the whole podcast like really was great. I kind of miss it, because she was like, we were like two opposite sides. Like, I was Disney and she was Elvira. Like, it was
great.
And, you know, relationships, you know, you can't, you just keep reinventing the wheel. I don't know why we haven't gotten it, but like, it's just endless fodder of crazy crap that you can just talk at nauseam. It's nuts. So it was a good podcast. I wanted to do my own about, you know, entrepreneurship. So we let that drop, but it was a lot of fun. She reminds me a lot of Stacy, and she does. When I was tattooing in the beginning, she was our front end person, and there would be guys that come in out of nowhere, and dude, the stuff that would come off the street, like if you've never had to deal with like clients that just walk in. I mean, if you worked at a bar, maybe.
Similar.
But you've never had to have people take their clothes off and then tat them on their side after they just worked.
My tattoos came from, let's see, right outside the Air Force base in Wichita Falls, Texas. As soon as I got out of the strip club,
dude.
After drinking 50 cent beer.
See, I was your tattoo artist, and Amy was the front end person. There'd be guys that would come in, they're like, hey, do you want to go out to our van? And like, we got beers out there. And Katie and Amy's like, no, and we also don't want to get raped and murdered either. You go out to your van? Are you out of your fucking mind?
We have a white panel van out here. Can you help me with my couch?
Dude. And so like when I go to church like holy jeans, I'm like, dude, you have no idea. Like this is
put
not
lotion on. Put lotion on.
I don't care about any of this. Like you gotta eat a lot worse for me to bat an eye. I have been through the fire.
Well, do you find this Amy, do you find that what I found when I started going to church quite a bit, and this was my church in Andover. It was a great church. I really dug it. I would the other people that had similar coming to religion later in life, mm-hmm. let's just say, that had done things. You know, it's one of the, you know, I was always of the idea of why would I want to be in any kind of congregation church that would have me as a member. You know, because I mean, it's obvious that you're hypocrites if you'd even let me in the door, because that's how far out I was, you know. And I mean, I remember when I walked in the first day, I was like, you know, because one of my friends in politics was like a super Jesus freak. I mean, just the one that you think that drives most people away because they're so Jesus freaky. Oh, you got to come and I'll teach you about the good news of Jesus. And it was, oh, fuck, you know, but. She was a good friend and I liked her. We loved the families, liked each other, and the kids would play together. All right. You know what? Maybe I'll try it. So, but before I went to it on a Saturday, I was going to go with her on Sunday. I went on Saturday and just kind of scoped it out. Me and Tucker went, you know, and there ain't a person that, and I'm going to say it. There ain't a goddamn person in church on Saturday unless you work there. And I walk in and all I heard was music and this band was playing. This dude was singing. And I'm like, you know, it was a big church. It's like, you know, the 2,500 or 3,000 seat arena, you know, the rock band and stuff, an evangelical, you know, typical Midwest evangelical church. Right. And I'm like, is this one of those super churches like that dude that has all the stuff on TV that everyone hates? I'm like, this is just weird. And I'm like, there's nobody in here. There's nothing going on. It was kind of, you know, the church building itself was pretty antiseptic and corporate, you know, like most of them are. And then this fucking like 6'4" bald, hard looking motherfucker comes walking up to me after the band stopped playing, stuff like that. Turns out he was the music ministry, like priest there or pastor and in charge of all the music and a really good musician. He's like, it's me and Tucker and Tucker's just a little kid. He's a short little fucker. Mm-hmm. He's like, can I help you? And I'm like, and he was kind of like, what the hell are you doing here? Kind of help you. And I'm like, I'm just kind of going down the street here. Honestly, I'm church shopping. I can't think of a better way. I just something's missing in my life. I don't know what it is. And I just came in here. And I had been to a bunch of other churches on that same street because it's one street. It's like car dealerships, but with churches. And most of them wouldn't even no one even talked to you. This like, you know, here's a pamphlet. Oh, we've got, see over there, that there's pamphlets. You can grab what you want, you know, and they go back in their business. I'm like, the fuck is this? So this guy's like, he's like instantly his demeanor just completely changed. And he's like, oh, Yeah. How can I help you? Let's talk, you know? And we sat there for an hour and he introduced me to this other priest, the other pastors and stuff. And I was like, this is totally different. Cause it was like the conversation we were having here.
Right.
And I didn't know what churches did other than fuck people over and tell you how bad you are and you're going to hell. That's what I figured churches did, because that's, you know, when I'd gone to weddings and funerals, that's what you heard at Irish Catholic churches in Boston. And so I started going, and it was like the first time I went, I'm like, this is a fucking cult. The band's playing. The band's playing. There's, oh my God, oh my God, you know. And they're singing. I'm like, this is, I'm sitting way in the back with my friend who's like an elder in this church, you know. And I'm just, she's like, what'd you think? I'm like, ah, I mean, other than the part where I was crying because something hit, I said, this is really weird. I told her, I said, this is really weird. I don't know if I can come back. But of course, I came back. And the more I went, I'd start asking questions like, do you guys sell Bibles here? Cause I don't know. Where do you get one of those? I'm thinking it's probably something I should know about. I mean, I was that far out. So I took that. They had a class that was like here's the introduction to the church. This is what we're about. And I'm like, me and Stacy went to this class and I'm like, yeah, I don't know shit. And I said it like that. I'm like, I don't know anything. I'm like, what's this all about? You know, what's a Pharisees? I don't know what a Pharisees is. What is it like a Pharaoh? Were those right. I'm thinking King Tut and not like King Tut from like Egypt. I'm thinking, you know, like Steve Martin King Tut.
That's what I was thinking of too.
Yeah. And this one lady that was coming to the church, she just moved to town and she was trying to find a church, and she had grown up Catholic and been in a staunch Catholic family. And she just looks at me and she's like, I envy you. And I'm like, envy me? Are you out of your mind? I don't know. God, I don't know. Not I told her, I think I even said, I don't know a goddamn thing what goes on here. And, you know, and then the pastor that was there, he just thought this was funny. I mean, he was just like, he was a cool guy. He was like, see, that's real people right there. This is who we need to reach.
But keep going, because you guys keep talking about this, because I have stuff to add. But she does envy you because that's that beginning heat.
Well, what she said was, you have no baggage. And I'm like, I hadn't thought of it like that. I have zero baggage from any religious churches or nothing. I was just like, what's this all about?
Too crazy.
A year later, I'm talking, I'm giving sermons in front of the whole congregation.
Really?
You too?
Yeah.
Jeez. Are you an ordained minister?
Nothing. No, I'm just a guy. See, I don't have the seal. I need to get the seal.
I'm not only an ex-con, I'm an ordained minister.
Yes. Those are the best kind of ex-cons.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of being in the junior high school ministry for a couple of years with a friend of mine. And
outstanding. Yeah,
when I got all turned on and got the Lord's fire under my ass.
Well, what I learned from all of that was, you know, I do believe organized religion, I don't think is a good thing. I think it's been corrupted on all levels by
terrible.
Humans. However, there are individual places where it still lives. And
it's terrible.
This church that I was in was one of those places these are the things that I didn't know. I didn't know why people went to church or gave money or anything like that. I never gave money. I just went. And then my wife got sick. And this is like 3-4 months after I started going to this church. So I didn't know anybody other than this one lady in the church. I'd met the pastor and, you know, I'd trying to find out, you know, it's me, so I'm gonna talk to people. But she gets sick, and Stacy ends up going to the hospital for like 6 days. She had like a pneumonia, a chest tube, and the whole bit. And mm-hmm. I worked 50 miles from home, and I got two kids. One of them was young, and one of them was junior high school. And the church just found out about this because my friend Jana was in there, and just like this new, you know, they didn't know me from shit. All of a sudden, I get a phone call from this lady, Brenda, who's the outreach person. She's like, we want to help you. You know, we'll bring dinners over. And so for these 6 days that the wife was in the hospital, they'd come and get the kids after school. And they'd bring them in, and they'd go hang out with other kids, and they'd do stuff. And they'd take them off for ice cream, and it was like awesome. And then dinners would show up. So I come home at night, and the kids are sitting at the table eating like lasagna. And I'm like, where'd this come from? You know, neither of you can drive. Oh, the church brought it over. And I never knew who did it. I never knew anything about it. No one took credit for any of it. It was just like, so I go to the church and I'm talking to Brenda. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? You know, how can I repay you for this? And she's like, there's no repayment. You know, I'm like, oh, okay. So this is what churches are supposed to be. I get it.
Fellowship.
The fellowship. Yeah. It all fell apart when COVID hit. Because most churches, they fell into the world of, if we continue doing these good deeds, we're going to get shut down.
Yep.
Well, actually,
they should have continued.
You're touching on to why I go to the church. I do. They stayed open during COVID, and actually, my pastor is looking into being defrocked by his order because he chose to stay open. And they're the free evangelical, or the evangelical free church is, from what I can tell, kind of witch hunting my pastor because of the fact that he chose to stay open, and he felt that a higher calling when people needed to have that, and they kept going. And it's a really interesting thing. Our church is now, it's in a private location. We do it in a barn and a little outbuilding that we do. It's very small. And so
the building doesn't matter.
No. So. And like you said, there's real mission. If anybody needs anything, you know, we come for them, and real fellowship. Everybody takes part, you know, bring something to eat. We all eat together on Sundays. Like I spend from 9:30 in the morning, which it takes me an hour to get there. So I get up at, you know, get out of the house by 8:30, get there at 9:30, and I spend until like 3 p.m. at church on Sunday. My whole Sunday is pretty much church. And it's wonderful. You asked about the corruption and what you guys were talking about. That is a very legitimate thing. And the reason being, at least that I can tell, is that there's a thing called 501c3, which is basically submitting yourself and asking for permission under the government to be a non-taxable entity.
Yep.
And when you do that, that's essentially putting a god before the god. And so it's a
false idol.
Yes, exactly. And you're asking for protection under something that you should never ask for protection. So it reorders the power structure. It's supposed to be family government, church government, then civil government, and you move through those things. But we've lost connection with those things, and that's been a very pointed thing. And that's why there's been all this attack on the family. Because if you unroot the family and you destructuralize that, then you shake everything apart, and then it gives more power to entities that should not have it. So that's why I'm where I'm at. Like it, because of COVID broke my heart in ways that I mean, it's the reason why I met all of you. Stapleton, everything I needed, like my heart was broken. And you know, that's what they say about Christ. He's for the brokenhearted. That's what got me was that. And then just realizing how many people, like you said, Ken, were there when I was that low, and when I felt, and I wasn't even that low, but like when I was really shook in everything, you know, the people that had always been there were there for me. And a part of it was my family. And so I started thinking, well, how can I have more time with my parents? You know, I'm very blessed to still have my parents. And, you know, there's a lot of my friends that don't. So I was like, you know, maybe I should stop being a whiny child and expecting them to be different people that I want them to be. Maybe I should just appreciate what they are. And maybe if I want a relationship with them, maybe I should hang out with them more.
Yeah.
So I started thinking about all the people that they went to church with. And I had heard about this church and this pastor, and my mom does not like anyone. And I include myself in that. I'm going to tell you, I really don't think if I was her kid, she'd like me. she doesn't like anybody, but she loves our pastor. Our pastor is like unscorched by any kind of, she really can't criticize him. And so I was like, I gotta meet this guy. Like, I gotta go and meet this guy. And I started thinking about it. I was like, these people hang out with my parents more than I do. So,
oh, that's a good point.
So I was like, well, if anything happens to my parents, you know, death is hard, and you know, our family and everything, we got a lot of, you know, all families have their issues, but I was thinking, you know, how cool would it be to have a community of people that know my family and who are tethered to them in that way? So I, that was my lead in, was wanting to spend more time with my family, being curious about this pastor that I'm like, how have you known my mom this long and not gotten her wrath or ire? And he's that amazing. He's really incredible. Very intelligent man, historian. He went to school for history first and then took over for his dad, being a pastor, and been doing it ever since. His whole family is incredible. The church is incredible. Every single my favorite, like one of my favorite people there is 75 years old. He's awesome. So like, And instantly, it's like you said, it's instantly, as soon as I was there, they were like, who are you? How are you? You know?
Yeah. And that's what the churches need to do. And that's where so many, like I said, I've gone to a whole bunch of them to try and find the one to get in. And most of them just, it was like a business you walk into, but you didn't have an appointment. And I'm like, this ain't the point. And like when Stacy was sick, now this is, like I said, it was only a few months after I started going to this church. They didn't know her. She wasn't coming with me. You know, mm-hmm. She had two kids to sit at home. And so I just go because I just needed to. And she was like, yeah, go do your thing. They sent one of the pastors and a couple people from the church found out where she was at the hospital that didn't even know her. And they went and saw her and visited her in the hospital. And it wasn't like, oh, come to our church and stuff. They were just like, how are you? How are you doing? You know, and they were really honestly wanted to talk to her. They weren't evangelizing, and they weren't trying to converter. They weren't trying to they were just like, you know, you're a sister of ours, and we want to be here for you. And I was like, what? And she was blown away. Her mom, who lived 3 miles away from the hospital, never came and visited her.
Yeah,
you know, but here's complete strangers that came. You know, it's just, that's unreal. What's this picture here?
There's Pastor Bruce.
Are you Pastor?
Oh, that is you. For crying out loud. Yeah, he is. Oh, you missed that. You were out for a minute. Yeah.
You were out for a minute.
He's ordained.
I'm ordained.
Oh, okay. Right on, man. I actually can't.
I've been in and out of the church for years. I got fired from God twice. So I'm done. No, just it was a situation where we got into it. It's pretty much a mega church here in the South Valley of San Jose. And I ended up buddying up with the junior high school pastor. And then they ordained me at the same time. And but before that, they had this real popular junior high school pastor or children's pastor, whatever. He went to start his own church. Well, his church went and it folded and stuff like that. So there's a big political pull in the church. And stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a racket. It's a club.
And, yeah, it was pretty much a racket. And then they pretty much came in one day and they cleaned out the whole ministry.
Wow.
And really left a sour taste in my mouth. And on top of that, I had stuck around for a while and they had bought a bunch of land around the church and stuff like that. And some stuff was starting to be said and some rumors going around. And I was kind of just like dropping out. And I was pretty high up in the church at that time. And the pastor had called me and I had missed a couple of weeks and pastor called me and said, here, come on, let's go have breakfast. You know, so he brought me in and we had breakfast and stuff. And he just kind of gave me the backdoor type of freaking explanation on stuff. And I'm just all like, dude, I'm out of here. I can't do this. Yeah. I don't, you're corrupt.
The churches are all made of men. They're not made of God.
Yeah, is it? Yeah, exactly. It's just like my God doesn't live here, dude. So you know, right now my God lives in my soil in my backyard, and we communicate all the time. So,
I mean,
you know what? Out of the whole church family that I had there, I probably have I'd say probably two people that we still, you know, commute and keep in contact with, but that whole big family that I had around me just kind of went away. And now that I go back there, every once in a while, I'll touch base with what's going on over there. And there's just like nobody. Just it was a feeding spot, and then that was it. Once you were fed and you got full, there was nothing else, because the only thing that the church was looking for was to feed people the news, the new good, the new. Yeah. And once you were mature in that, you were not expected to move on. You were just expected to capitulate, fall in line and capitulate. And I wasn't about capitulating. So that was the end. That was it. You know, so I'm called to do what I'm doing here. I'm called to do what I'm doing with teaching people about prepping and homesteading and gardening and growing food and stuff like that. So that's kind of awesome. Yeah, I mean that's my calling. That's you know, I finally got it after a while. This is what I do, because this is where I'm at peace, and this is, you know, this is where we communicate. You know, as odd as that might sound to a lot of people, you know, that's where I communicate it. You know, it's where
I just want to talk about guns.
Yeah. I gotta pull out of here, because I've got to get this thing posted up.
It's only like 3 in the afternoon where you are. For the rest of us, we all gotta get up in the morning. Yeah,
exactly. It's fucking 12:15 a.m. and I just had somebody from a label message me wanting to hop on a call.
So. Yeah, there you go.
Which is crazy, because I'm supposed to have it tomorrow at 9. Live in
California, I'm sorry.
Dude, I'll go upstairs and have a whole conversation with Rico until 3 a.m. about this. Like, I don't even know. Like, you got to cut me off.
Like, seriously. Well, again, Amy and we were talking about this, and we're all like, yeah, we don't really need a topic. It's Amy, and it's us. We could just get in there and say blue. And then it would be 2 hours of talking about that.
True that you know, there's like 45 different types of blue. Yeah, you know, my favorite one is you.
Cerulean, you know, sky blue. Yeah,
exactly.
Why so blue?
Yeah.
Singing the blues, you know.
Blue balls.
Blue balls.
Those happened too.
That was horrible.
Only Jason. Amy, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. You'll ask me again. I would love to come back on. I love you.
Absolutely.
Guys.
More than welcome.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I got
to see all here. Of you.
So you guys can stay if you want to. I got to get out of here. So I'll talk to
all
you.
All right. Later. We'll see you, Bruce.
All right. Bye.
Later, Bruce. Good to see you.
Yeah. He's cutting out earlier than all of us. Like, yeah, this is crazy.
Every time.
I'm like the latest every time.
Yeah, I know it is. Well, it's like, so Amy had, we did her podcast. This was a few years ago. And we're just like, what are we going to talk about? I don't know. And it was like 3.5 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was Joe Rogan level of, you know.
Yep.
Well, technically, we've been going over 2 hours now, because it's been 1 hour on the recording and then we did an hour on the live.
What?
Time. I got a solid 6 hours in me, because that's how long I have to entertain my clients usually. Yeah,
that's true.
I can just talk, man. Like, you spin me off in a different direction. I got, the only thing that's gonna happen is I have liquid here, so I will have to pee again. That's the only problem.
I know. I finished this, and now this is gone.
Dude, I swear, I thought you were going to say I peed 3 times since we've been sitting here. I thought that's what you were going to say.
I'm like a camel. So this is maybe I'm like a camel. Stacy, she's like, because I'll be like one of those people that just, you know, we're talking and I'm there for hours, and then all of a sudden I got to go to the bathroom, and she calls it the forever pee. So I timed it one time, because I was just like, this, I don't know if this is healthy or not.
You're like Tom Hanks in The League of Their Own.
4.5 minutes I went. Just straight being 4.5 minutes. Now I could barely walk into the bathroom, because you know, we're out having a good time, and I'm like, I don't want to go to the bathroom, because I always notice it if I go run to the bathroom, come out, and it's like half the people are gone, and I'm like, well, if they all leave, I'm gonna just sit there. I can hold it.
No, man, I can't do it. I'll pee myself.
It is a skill. As I get older, it gets worse, but it's still a forever pee.
I haven't had those forever pees in a long time, man. I remember back in like elementary school, time frame when I would go stay the night over at friends.
Oh god.
And
yeah.
we would stay up all night, like drinking like a case of Pepsi's each and shit like that. You know, back before we knew it was fucked up for you.
Yeah. And that six bags of Doritos and a case of
exactly.
Pepsi.
Like all that stuff was fine. Like, no, like there was like cases of Pepsi in the closet. I could just grab a Pepsi whenever I wanted to, whenever I was a little kid. It's like, how do I not have type 4 diabetes or something, you know? And exactly. Yeah, and then but no, I remember like staying up and stuff like that. And we would drink so many or whatever, and like playing games or watching movies or whatever. And then we would have those forever peas. It was like take forever, man, in there just nonstop. Man. That's crazy.
I would be interested in, because have you guys had a woman on here before? Because I would be interested.
You're the first guest, period.
Yeah.
A couple of the guys. All we've had for guests is women.
Because I was wondering, like in the survival status, like you guys are talking about long peas. I just think that, you know, having a dick is very advantageous in a survival situation. I'm just like,
we can shoot and pee. I've done it.
We got a whole
target shot and peed.
Like we got we attract bears. That's why in biblical days they put us in the tent.
That's true. That's true.
Like we were problematic. Like, so I would love to just hear, because I'm sure, you know, Bruce is married, right? Like he's got a lady. I'm sure she has had to couple with him. I don't shoot muzzle loaders as much as Rico does, but like she has to have some like good tips for the ladies out there when it comes to that. I felt really bad because I asked my pastor's daughter. She went to Africa and like did a whole mission trip out there, and I was like,
cool,
you are better than me. I said I have to ask you, what did you do?
Yeah. How did you clean stuff?
I was like, there's freaking lions. And she was like, I mean, you know, sometimes it was in a bucket and like, you know, just like, you know, we had provisions, you know, we made sure that we had provisions for that. And I was just like, what?
Our church, we did a thing in the Congo where there was this hospital that was basically a like shitty old building from the 30s that was like cinder blocks.
Oh my God.
And it was the only hospital within 125 mile radius of where it was. And they only had electricity. They had electricity 2 days a week for 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a hospital. And so we went over and visited. I didn't go, but when their group went over and visited, you know, one of the things we were trying to do was hire a surgeon to be there a full time, get electricity to the place and water that was better. And so he was walking through and he was talking about it. It's like, you know, he went through the maternity ward at this hospital, and there's like six or seven women in the maternity ward. And it's like this one lady's sitting there, and the baby's like 2 months old. And so they got talking to her. They're like, well, you know, is everything okay? Is there something we can do? She's like, oh, no, I can't pay for the delivery yet. And they won't we can't leave until we can pay for the delivery. She'd been there for 2 months.
Oh, my God.
And so, you know, they went to the hospital administrators and like, yeah, this is the way we do this here. They have to pay because otherwise we had so many people, they have to pay. So that made sense. You know, we're feeding her. We're doing that. We're not charging her anymore, but they have to pay for this delivery. How much is the delivery charge? It's $60.
Oh, my God.
And the other five women that were there were in the same boat where they'd been there for weeks or stuff. So the church is like, yeah, we're paying for all that right now. Just let them go, you know. Nice. And we were able to get electricity to that hospital. We put in we drilled a well. We literally flew a well drilling unit over to the Congo, and that was the amount of bullshit that we had to go through to get the red tape to get that through. And then we go around that whole area drilling wells, and then we put up another wing of this hospital to help people. And I was like, okay, I'll give you this, because then a lot of them, they came over, you know, some of the people that were the dignitaries in the town and stuff would come over, and, you know, they would talk, you know, because they were Christians, where it's not a good thing to be a Christian. You know, they kill you out there for that shit. And so listening to his stories, but because I got into the church and got to be, you know, again, I was the first guy with my hand up, and doing that stuff. When they came, I got to really talk to these guys, and the stories they were telling of the life they had to live over there compared to, you know, our affluent town outside of Minneapolis, Andover. It was like, okay, we are doing something. There's something good that we're going. I mean, we sent like $700,000 over to them, and that was just a piece of what we were able to do at this church.
That's so awesome.
I appreciated that. Like I said, and that's why COVID broke my heart, because I'm like, all of a sudden, the church elders just said, yeah, we're going to lose our 401 or our 501c3 status. We're going to do this. It was in because Minnesota was locked down hard. The governor was a real son of a bitch, and he was going after churches hard. And so was Keith Ellison, who was the attorney general, who's a Muslim fucking, he's a bad, bad human being. And he's a Muslim, like a Muslim Brotherhood kind of guy. Let's see what we can do to squash this Christian movement, because the evangelical in the Midwest, it's a big deal. And Midwesterners are in generally not fighters. You know, they just go along to get along. And being from Boston, we'd have told everyone to go, you know, fuck themselves. But
well, if you're truly of a Muslim faith, I'm pretty sure it says in there that they don't get down with Christians. So like, they're not about it.
No, they don't mind the Christians, but their goal is to convert them to the Muslim faith, because they believe, the Christians believe Jesus walked the earth. They believe all in this, or the Muslims believe that. It's just they don't think that he is the absolute Messiah. They believe
him as the great. I'm talking to the guys at work about this. They see him as like, he's like
another prophet,
like he's like the second greatest prophet.
Yeah,
like Muhammad was basically just like the reformer from what Jesus put out.
Right, right.
That's basically how they see it is that, you know, Muhammad's the reformer because Christianity started going so far astray, he had to bring it back in to get, like, then that's why they're so strict on everything. You know, that's basically it was like, that was a reformation. And supposedly, I haven't looked into it, but supposedly like in the Bible and stuff like that, Jesus talks about there will be other prophets to come after me in order to maintain. Yes. It's like every so often a prophet has to come to set everybody straight. And basically, so then that's why, so like Jesus prophesied Muhammad's coming supposedly or whatever.
But the,
very interesting.
But he didn't name the prophets and the false prophets. Yeah.
Yeah, all that.
And that's where,
oh, it's the same God. No, it's not the same God, because we believe in a Trinitarian God. You believe in a God, which really does define the faith, which is why I like Christianity, because I believe that three heads of leadership is the best
China, it's called Fuso Lo, which it's a three-legged stool.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of their societies is, because any one of those legs goes away and it, the whole thing collapses.
Right. Well, and you don't get a stalemate because you don't have two oppositions. Right. You have forward motion. So you always have a tiebreaker when you have three.
Yeah.
There's three heads. So that's why I like it. But, you know, these metaphysical talks. But yeah, the it's been a big thing. And as I've walked into this space, it's been interesting to watch it from that vantage point, how very, very much so people are against any kind of faith, really. You know, like that I can see. But yeah, Christianity, man, people don't like it right now.
Well, they've been sold not to like it. And that's part of the problem.
And
they've been sold by the churches not to like it. I was for 42 years. I was not a Christian at all. I was like, these church people are fucking lunatics.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
that's what I thought.
Some of them are, though. I mean,
yeah. And a lot of them are.
Really are.
A lot of them are.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, in my church, the biggest thing that I've seen is, this very, because you gotta be, the way it was described to me is, well, what if you saw a three-year-old playing in the road, like what would you do? And I was like, I'd save the three-year-old, of course. But if you're equivocating that to a non-saved person, then that's inappropriate because you're not talking about somebody who is a child playing in the road. You're talking about an adult person, more than likely, that mm-hmm. has a rationale and that you know, has experienced things in life that you have to work with. And, you know, like, and there's also like a faith in God that you have to have. So it doesn't come through you. Like, you're not going to be able to say anything. And the best example of this was a girl that was like talking about this recently on Facebook. She said, what would be the one thing, one scripture that you would offer to somebody if you both knew that you were about to die, like, and you knew that that would be the one thing that you could tell them that maybe would get them saved? And I told her, I was like, you know, my friend John Simmons recently went missing. I never saw it coming. He was a Weird. Good friend of mine, was doing Bible study recently. We would have deep-rooted conversation. I never saw this coming. And I did know that we all have demons. We all have things that we go through that hurt us. But I gave him Proverbs 3 through 13 through 18. It's all about you hold wisdom, you have wealth. And he had a lot of hangups about money and being a person of a lot of money. And that was kind of his thing, is that he felt inadequate in that area. And I said, you know, what kind of wealth are you like looking for, John? Because for me, you are one of the wealthiest people that I've ever met, because every time I'm around you, I learn something. You've done so much. I mean, he had dengue fever because he lived in South America at one point. Like, who the fuck has dengue fever? And like, you know, like, I mean, a lot of people, but like, usually they not live here. Yeah, like here. And so like, he was just an incredible human. And I gave him that. And I told my friend, I said, you know, I gave him that because that was something I saw he struggled with. But no matter what, you can't see somebody's heart. God can, like you said. And you have to have faith that if you're presented with a person who is truly seeking, that you'll have the words to convict their heart, like that you'll have that about you. I said, but you know, what it means to me is that I just need to center in around my own faith and my own healing, because exemplifying what you expect to find is the best thing that you can do when it comes down to people and influencing them. And as long as you have, and that's what I tell people all the time at church, I'm like, this whole like attack people with like Christian faith thing, you guys got to stop. What we need to exude is like this untouched joy that people look at and they're like, what crack are they smoking? Like, really, what are they sniffing right now? Because whatever it is, I want that. Like, we need to walk around so freaking happy and just skipping on clouds that people are like, what is going on here?
Right, if you right.
Smash people over the head with the faith. And even a three-year-old, you come and rush them and grab them out of the you know, danger, they're going to freak out because they don't know what just happened. Like, you just saved their life, but they don't know you just saved their life. They don't even understand what you're doing. You just traumatized that kid.
Right.
While you radically like grab them and like shook them up. I mean, yeah, you saved their life, but like, what is that good if they don't know what the hell just happened and you just traumatized them? Now they're like, whoa, you know? So that's kind of my whole thing with it at this point. But I'm very much so am enjoying myself, and like you said, some really incredible people in that space. But yeah, like Minnesota is crazy, man. Like, there's a lot of shit in Minnesota. You know what I heard about recently? Have you guys listened to Louder with Crowder, the operation that they just did where they found out about the Chinese nationals that are buying up Oklahoma farmland? Yep, yep. And kind of infiltrating the pot game, and how like the triad, yep, like kind of.
Well, do you know what he left out is because the Saudis have owned that here for a long time, and I've got a friend that's in that industry, and he said the Saudis came to town and they're not paying taxes, they're and it's a mob, and they go and they just say, you can fight us, but we'll crush you and you'll end up in a ditch. Mm-hmm. And they were serious, and that's what's been going on. So that the Chinese see what the Saudis have been doing, and they're like, hold my beer, you know.
Yeah.
You want brutal. There's no one more brutal than the Chinese if they need to be.
Oh, I know. So,
yeah, it's a pretty interesting thing, because there's another side of the Chinese. That's the side that I deal with on a daily basis, that are the most incredible capitalists that you will meet.
Oh, yeah. And
I don't know which ones are buying that land down there, because just because it's the marijuana that they want to grow doesn't mean that they're one side or the other. They're just opportunists like the rest of us.
Well, from what they've discovered, they said it's a big place of like literal slavery, because they're hoarding people there and workers and not paying them. And they're just having them be on like in these little shacks, these men like 15 to a shack, and they're working, and they're like, yeah, they're gonna pay us like when we get back. And it's like, dude, I don't know about that.
that they can only do that for so long, though. Once that gets found out and gets to the media, that's over. If they're bringing in Chinese workers, then they could do that for a little bit longer, because they don't know that they can go anywhere. They're captured, basically slaves. But that won't fly here for very long, because as they grow and get better, because what they will do is they will corner the market, and then the spotlight will be shined on them. Right now, they're still under the radar a little bit. So
from that's what I've heard, they're like syncing up with the Mexican cartels as well. Which, when I was invited to go out to Oklahoma, there was like this big thing that says, "Do not do cocaine in Oklahoma. It will have fentanyl. Like, do not do it." And I was like, I was not planning on doing it. I'm not smoking your pot either, by the way. I was told that I should get my green card, and I was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm just going to come and tattoo and enjoy.
Yeah, do the tattoos, do the things, you know.
Do any of that.
I painted bikes for the Hell's Angels, and that was managed to just paint their bikes. You look cool. You paid me. Everything's good.
It's crazy. But
anyway, you guys, I'm going to bail. I got to run.
Yeah.
Amy, thank you so much. It was so great to catch up.
Definitely. I'll do it again anytime.
Yeah, and we should talk more. You, me, and Carol got to jump on a call and talk for 4 hours.
Dude, it'd be so good. Any one of you, I mean, obviously I can just ramble on whatever.
Me too, for hours. If I didn't have to work tomorrow, I'd be like, oh, I'm done, but I got a couple things I gotta do.
Thank you.
Chris has to go to work. Well, Chris, you're going to work in about 20 minutes, aren't you?
No, about 5 minutes. I'm gonna get on a call with an indie label and
get some work. So get some sleep at some point.
Chris, thank you for recording and setting this all up. This was great.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it was actually easier than I thought. So I think we'll have to start doing this for the pre and the post.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Switch back and forth. Yeah.
Cool, man. Next time I'll join the right stream. I joined the wrong one.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. I was sitting there. I joined at 7 or 8:45 my time.
Sure.
And I'm sitting there and I'm like,
where are these fuckers?
And then I go through my email and I'm like, shit, I joined the one from
I was literally just texting you if you were going to join us when you jumped in. I'm like,
yeah.
Save that one.
Oh, that's so that's a meme move.
I was doing the same thing with you, Amy. Honestly, I was texting you. I'm like, room's open whenever you're ready.
I had
it like, before I hit send, you were there. I'm like, yes.
Yeah. I got it. All right, guys. Well, have a great night. Thank you.
Yep, so you
much.
Too.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We'll see you again.
Yeah.
Bye.